Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So, stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today? Desire and detachment. Before we explore this topic, I'd like to say a few words about Alice Bailey, founder of the Lucis Trust. Lucis Trust sponsors Inner Sight. Alice Bailey wrote 24 volumes of literature, and those 24 volumes of literature are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. The following thought is also from the works of Alice Bailey. Underlying the entire psychological problem of humanity lies that major attitude towards life which we call desire. All lesser problems stem from this basic urge. Why is desire such a driving force for human beings?
I'm not sure, but it's certainly a major theme that the Buddha addressed, and we've just observed the full moon of the Buddha, known as the Vaisak Festival, so it seems appropriate to deal with this topic. As the opening thought said, it's the major psychological problem. Everything else stems from the force of desire. And the Buddha expressed the basic crux of the issue in what he called the Four Noble Truths that he had observed about life in human beings. He said, cease identifying with material things or desires. Gain a proper sense of values. Stop regarding possessions and even earthly existence itself as of major importance. And then he said, follow the Noble Eightfold Path of right relations, which begins with right values and ends in right happiness. That, he said, was the secret to liberation and to a true soul happiness, we could say, not the personality giddiness that we might mistake for happiness. Whether or not his truths are relevant for today depends on how we respond to them when we hear them. If they don't really evoke a sense of providing keys to the way to live, then they probably wouldn't work for one, and one should pursue one's desires a little bit more until one is finally satiated. But there is a certain point in spiritual development where I think each individual now, 2,500 years after the Buddha lived, knows that what he was saying is still true.
Yes, we're still, that's the perennial or the proverbial or the ancient scourge is this desire and the seeking after material things, usually, or things of pleasure. In fact, one definition is desire is attachment to objects of pleasure. And
like chocolate.
Well, yes. Chocolate is one of the biggies. So you have to really think about that. So it's been around for eons of time. But it's, as you said, I think you implied that it's necessary in the beginning for this factor of desire to play itself out.
Yes.
Because it's the urge that does pull a person forward, even though it may be forward into trouble.
We
learn from experience, exactly, and that's what desire is meant to do.
The Buddha understood that all desire is a kind of glamour, and in recent programs we've been talking about glamour. And the reason it's a glamour is because it's self-referring. All desire deepens our isolation from the whole, from others, from life itself, from the essential unity of life, because it's saying, I want for me. And that's true whether we're talking about fame or money or position or good fortune or reputation or happiness or success. It's all about furthering the interests of the individual and therefore separated self. It, even if it seems that, say, you're striving for success in your career, that seems so right and of such ultimate good to the world, because if you could be successful, you would do good. But still, if you think it through, it's striving to attain something for the separated self and its own enhancement. And these desires can become quite rarefied and subtle on higher levels as we develop spiritually, and yet they are still about furthering the interests of the separated self. And learning to really see the dimensions of that, to think it through, is quite difficult.
But we also talk about, in the title of this theme, is desire and detachment. And so that's one of the great tasks or before every individual, eventually, once you reach that stage in your career, your soul journey, then there may be a point where you want to step onto the path of discipleship and begin to apply certain disciplines. And that's at the point where this detachment comes in. You have to begin to detach yourself from this desire nature and the pull of the desire.
And how one goes about that is, I think, a running theme through many of the world's great religions and through philosophies, and has been the message of teachers through the eons. Mm-hmm. I've just been reading Epictetus, the great Greek Stoic, and I was astonished to see how apropos his teaching is for today's times, because he deals essentially with overcoming desire and being at peace with one's life and one's lot in life. And he said 2,000 years ago, the problem is we think we can control our life. We think we can control the world and make it what we want it to be. But in fact, he said we cannot choose our external circumstances. I wonder, though, for today, with technology and education being what it is, we might have been lulled into thinking we can control our external environment and we can control the circumstances of our life. And in a sense, I suppose this is creative living, but then if you have the bottom fall out of your life through divorce or illness or the loss of profession or the loss of reputation or the loss of somebody that you loved, then you realize, well, maybe I'm not so good at controlling life. And that was his message. We cannot control the circumstances of life. All we can control is how we react to them, what our attitudes are.
Yes, and being controlling life is, it's interesting today. I think one of the, I don't know what to call it, but one of the forces that have been presented to this modern society is, that really plays into desire nature, is the credit card. And I was thinking of that today.
It's
what, it just feeds the desire nature, this credit card, and it really brings you up short to it, whether you can decide whether you have control over your life or not, or does the power of this, unending spending, does it control you? And it's the credit card is kind of there as the karma, or it judges whether you have the ability to bring yourself under control or bring this desire nature under control or not. And you see this huge, running up this huge debt, then that should be a signal to you that maybe something is still wrong.
Yeah, it's a phenomenon of the times, as is the constant enticement of our desire nature. by the media, by society. We are probably much more aware of what we don't have and what we would like to have than perhaps people living 1,000 years ago who were much more simple in their aspirations. First of all, they wanted to just stay alive, survive disease and epidemics and war and all that. Now we have much more subtle desires, but they're still very material. And the media issue a constant bombardment of, wouldn't you like to have this? Wouldn't you wish you were that? And it does take resistance.
Yes, I mean, there is a plethora of objects and gadgets that are constantly being thrown at us to buy and to have and to use. And all these electronic gadgets, and it makes them so easy to obtain and to carry around that we think we can't live without them. But that's all part of the test. I mean, every thing about desire has consequences. Mm-hmm. Every time you play out desire, a desire that you have, it has consequences for you. There's certain karma involved.
That reminds me of that old saying, men learn by means of evil that good is best.
Yeah.
That sort of implies what you're saying, that if you run the gamut of your desires, you learn from them. But a lot of people would prefer not to have to go to the depths of suffering and despair. They'd like to learn more quickly than that to reverse their course. And the writings of Alice Bailey provide some guidelines for overcoming desire and reorienting it. And one is to cultivate an awareness of what she called the observer, which is the stance of the soul, the higher self, which is ourselves, but the part of ourselves that is not so fixated on the material possessions of the outer realm and of worldly status and of the pleasures of the senses. There is the observer, which is enduring and free of the outer planes of life. And to imagine how our soul views life can be the beginnings of cultivating the viewpoint of the observer.
And that factor of the soul is interesting because it is this whole thing about desire actually originates, I think, with the soul, because the soul on its own level of existence has this desire for form life, to incarnate into a form, into a mm-hmm. physical human form.
We wouldn't be here without
and
it.
That's right. And because this desire is fulfilling the plan of God, and so it goes very back very deep. And so this whole issue about desire is something that comes, it's not just a fluke. Everybody has it because it originates from the soul level.
And it becomes especially powerful at a certain stage of spiritual development because it becomes a mixture of emotion and of mind. And perhaps after the break we can talk a bit about a concept of mental avarice that's kind of interesting.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, desire and detachment. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company today, and that's the book entitled The Golden Thread. The Golden Thread is by Natalie Banks, a longtime student of Alice Bailey. And the special offer comes in the form of free shipping and handling. So the book is available for $6. A little bit about the book, The Golden Thread. The Golden Thread is it's a brief but remarkably expansive view of the ageless wisdom and traces its origin to ancient world religions and myths, both of the East and the West, and its development throughout history. The book is an excellent introduction to the ageless wisdom, which we speak about so often on this show. The ageless wisdom as written in the 24 books by Alice Bailey. So if you want to take a deeper look at this theme that we're exploring today, desire and detachment, might be a good idea to order The Golden Thread by Natalie Banks. So only $6, and make a little notation that you heard about the offer on Inner Sight. To order, just send a check or a money order, $6, to Lucis Publishing Company. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, the book is The Golden Thread, $6 check or money order, to Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. If you'd like to get in contact with us for any other reason, package of general information, schedule of our meditation meetings, or any reason whatsoever, just give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS. And also, we appreciate the donations you've given us in the past and sent to us in the past, both large and small. Collectively, that's what keeps us continuing with these shows that we'd certainly like to do over and over again and every week for as long as we can. Certainly, those donations are an expression of your support, so thanks again. They are tax deductible, and any donations you might want to send to us can be sent to Lucis Trust, Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And by the way, all of our Inner Sight programs can be heard on our website at www.lucistrust.org. On the homepage, you'll find a link to today's program, which will be available for hearing in a day or two. Last week's program is already available, and many of our past programs can also be heard. Once again, it's www.lucistrust.org. The theme of each week's program is posted in advance on our website, so you can see in advance what next Sunday's program will be. We were going to talk about
Avarice,
right. That's the word I was trying to think of. I'm not guilty of that, so I found it very difficult to remember the word. But what were you going to say about avarice in relation to our topic of desire and detachment?
Apparently, avarice is a kind of a mental covetousness. And I mentioned earlier that this idea of dealing with desire runs throughout all the world's religions and philosophies. And we've been talking in recent programs about Patanjali, who was an ancient teacher. Nobody's even sure when he lived, but he was the first to write down the laws and rules of the spiritual path that are contained within the Vedas of Hinduism. And he spoke about one of the basic rules for human conduct being abstention from avarice. It's not stealing somebody else's stuff. That's theft. It's a more of a mental and emotional covetousness that seeks to possess traits of character and of attainment in life that one has not rightfully earned. I suppose another more common word for it is envy. And if we envy the state or the attainment of someone else, that is a kind of desire that's misplaced, because we only can rightfully possess what we ourselves have earned. And you can't skip from basic mediocrity to greatness overnight. It's earned through trial and effort and success and failure both. There's that wonderful statement from St. Paul in the New Testament. He said, "I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content." That really sums it all up. Accept one's present state as just right for whatever one's place in the spiritual path is. It reflects to us both what we presently are and what we next need to achieve.
Right. We have to take ourselves as we are at the moment.
It's not being passive.
No. It's
it's what?
I guess I would think of it, what came to mind when you said that was a more or less a faith and a trust in in the universe, more
yes,
or less that
the rightness of the
whether
universe.
I like it or not, I'm in this position, and I've gotten here because of my attitudes, my viewpoints, my past history, and let me deal with it, perhaps. overcome things or whatever.
Alice Bailey said there is no circumstance that does not offer some gain to the life of the soul. So one's present circumstances are just right.
And that's a decision of the soul to choose this particular life and this particular body and this particular family that you're born into, an ethnic group, and etc. And the soul has problems to work out, has plans to work out of its own, and we don't always know what those particular plans are, but it may not have anything to do with what we think it should be doing in life, or a certain profession, or a certain degree of, or a certain money income, or all of that. That may have very little or nothing to do with what the soul has in mind, and that's the great test that we have to try to listen to that inner voice of the soul and try to let that be the guide, really, and then we begin to synchronize with the life of the soul.
There's a wonderful Buddhist term for this. It's called dharma. And it has multiple meanings. One meaning is duty, another is obligation, another is the following of the law. And essentially, the Buddha's teaching is dharma, which is the law. He laid down rules and guidelines for conduct that would lead to liberation, and that's the Buddhist path. The dharma is the working out of one's obligations. As you say, it's doing what next needs to be done and not evading it. It's another way of saying it's accepting one's karma.
And it's the following the characteristics, following the dictates of the soul, because we have to remember, too, that the basic quality of the soul is love. And it's not love for things, which is the physical man's desire for things. These are objects that are output for, external to the person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's objects of desire. But the soul, on the other hand, the basic urge of the soul is the desire to serve. And this is what really turns the corner, enables the person to turn the corner when that realization takes over. The basic urge of the soul is to serve, and to serve selflessly. And as that begins to qualify your life, then this whole thing about desire begins to shift.
And yet, even service and love can trip one up. Those sound like such high-grade impulses, and they are. But so many good people want to love and serve their families, those nearest and dearest to them, and yet what they do is become an interfering force. In a way, they try to live the life of those they love for them, because they believe they know what the person needs to do and become. That's not detachment, and it's not service. Basically, it's learning the lesson of detachment that enables us to say those we love are in the care of the soul, and all I can do is sustain them as they submit to the guidance of the soul. They don't need me to live their lives for them.
Right, and that detachment begins when orientation of the life, of one's life, turns inward towards the soul and away from form life. As your energies are turned inward towards the soul, and this doesn't mean to inward away from living, it means just inward to the very source of what you are. And depletes the energy of desire towards objective things. So, I mean, the energy follows thought, and where your thoughts are concerned with the soul and the service of the soul, then that takes away from the force or the power of the desire for objects, for the outer world.
There was a wonderful quote I came across in a book which quoted the third patriarch of Zen, whoever that is. I'm showing my ignorance here. But what he said is interesting, whether or not we know what he represented. He said, to set up what you like against what you dislike, that's the disease of the mind. When the 10,000 things are viewed in their oneness, we return to the origin and remain where we've always been, one in all in one. If only this is realized, no more worry about not being perfect. And I think that builds upon what you're saying.
Worrying about being perfect.
And remembering that when we give up desire, we can return to where we've always been, one in all. Mm-hmm. The unity that we crave already exists, but as long as we try to feed the interests of the separated self, we're keeping ourselves apart from that oneness.
And that separateness is really what keeps us, yes, as you say, it keeps us apart.
And
from
suffering.
Right. Mm-hmm. And one suffers because one is in a separated state.
Mm-hmm. And even the concern with one's reputation, think of how many good people are concerned about their reputation. They live a good life, they want to be recognized as being a good person, so much of their energy goes into maintaining that reputation and being thought well of. And yet, in fact, one of the most advanced stages of the path involves the complete loss of everything, including reputation. So we realize that lies ahead of us. We have to let it all go.
That's, yes, the concern for reputation, that turns it right back on that little self again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
wanting it to be thought well of.
Right. And mm-hmm. wanting to be loved and wanting to be appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the major glamours that of the personality life.
There's some wonderful words from an ancient scripture that probably we could all hold in mind. It says, Lord of my life, how can I do the duty of this day, yet seek detachment? Meet every need, yet free myself from ties and bonds. God said, the sun draws near and vivifies the earth. Naught can it take from out the earth. Live likewise. Give and ask naught.
Please take advantage of the special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the book entitled The Golden Thread by Natalie Banks, longtime student of Alice Bailey. Special offer comes in the form of free shipping and handling. It's $6 and $6 check or money order to Lucis Publishing Company. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S. Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. That's Lucis Publishing Company, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.